Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We have a lot to share. We're going to, of course, share the latest on health and healing, and then we're going to look at some other issues that are important, including a commentary that I've written. We also have a commentary today from Professor Henry Giroux, who does a lot of insight upon the dynamics of fascism. Before we get to all that, I just want to address a couple of issues that I think would help all of us. First, right now there's a crisis in confidence in the mainstream media. Much of that mainstream media has shown its bias. And unfortunately, as you'll hear later in the program today, we're going to play you a clip that documents from the Church Committee hearings and the transcripts that, yes, the CIA has been working hand in glove with many members of the media, all the major media, radio, television, print, and internet, and international media, to sell the stories they want you to believe in. And that's serious. Look at the consequences. We would not have gone into the Vietnam War had we not believed that the North Vietnamese attacked the American ship, I think it was the Maddox, in the Gulf of Tonkin. And as a result, that was used as the basis going into Vietnam. It turns out that that was wrong. The first time we officially heard that it was wrong was in the Fog of War, Earl Morris's outstanding documentary that won the Academy Award, I believe, that year, where McNamara, who was Secretary of Defense, so stated, you know, it was a false flag. Well, that false flag cost a lot of people's lives. Not just directly in Vietnam, but when you talk about the Vietnam War, you must also include Laos, Cambodia. That's also a part of it, because of all the different troop bombings in that area. Over 500,000 dead alone in Cambodia from secret bombings that Nixon and Kissinger, who's still around today, and by the way, there's no statute of limitations on war crimes. But no one chooses to go after any of these people. No one was ever held accountable. The worst that happened was Lyndon Johnson was being pressured not to run again. So we estimate on the most conservative side, 3.5 million Vietnamese dead. But others have raised the picture when you increase the war to the other countries that it's almost 7 million. That's a huge genocide, all done intentionally, all benefiting the military-industrial complex, none of it benefiting the people of Vietnam or the American public. Remember the domino theory? If we don't get them there, then they'll start going through all the islands and end up in San Francisco. Well, that was nonsense. But then consider the other places we went based upon lies the media has told us. Remember, we were told we had to go into Iraq in 1991 because they were throwing babies on the floor and stealing the incubators. Well, it turns out the person who said that got enormous publicity, was the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador working for public relations, a company, I believe it was Hill & Knowlton. But it was all that was based upon made-up information. It was just all lies. Think of the consequences. The regime change, all the dead and injured, and exposing over a million Americans to depleted uranium, biological and chemical warfare. In fact, at that time, I did a series of reports showing that American soldiers were coming back who didn't even fight in the conflict. So it wasn't post-traumatic stress disorder. They were only there for a short period of time. There was no combat for these people. In fact, some were on the ships, didn't even make it to shore. They suffered from Gulf War syndrome. And we had studies showing that they suffered from a particular type of microorganism. And Dr. Garth Nicholson, who was a professor and chairman of a department down MD Anderson, found this Mycoplasma incognitus, and he said to me, when I asked, what is this? He said, this is a weaponized microorganism. This does not exist normally in nature, and it really destroys a person's immune system, and we're not recognizing it. Well, and there's ways of treating it. My office in New York at that time at the Tri-State Healing Center had dozens of Gulf War vets. The doctors said they didn't know what was wrong with them, so they're classifying all of it as all these people have emotional issues. They didn't. It was physical. We work with them. In fact, I went to Washington, D.C. I went to Connecticut to interview Dr. Dodd, or Congressman Dodd, in the House. I went to Washington, D.C., interviewed multiple senators and legislators and said, what are you going to do about this? They held hearings. They were lied to at the hearings. The so-called experts coming forward, the medical doctors coming forward, all lied. So I've seen, being a journalist and an investigative reporter for all these years, decades, I've seen lie after lie after lie. And yet we wake up today believing that whatever we're going to hear in the mainstream media couldn't be lies. Must be real. And now they're moving to set up a database that would then say these are organizations were blocking their news, or you don't want to listen to them because it's all fake news. This is a new form of McCarthyism. They're not putting the New York Times, CNN, they're not putting the Boston Globe or the Miami Herald, they're not putting the Washington Post or MSNBC on these lists of fake news. They're putting the people who actually have the courage to produce real news. So right now, I'm going to give you a list of the institutions that I believe represent the real media in the United States, the honest media in the United States. These are ones that I trust. I have found them to be way ahead of the curve. They have some of the finest reporting because they're using those disassociated and dissatisfied journalists who once worked for the mainstream media saw they could no longer work for such a compromised media or such a politicized media, and therefore working for these smaller blogs. And yet these are the very ones that they're trying to, in effect, ban, outlaw, or blacklist. And if you tell people enough, don't go to a particular news source because it's misinformation you're going to get, people won't go there frequently. Here's the ones that I say, go to these websites. They are legitimate. They are qualified. They do their homework. Common Dreams, Consortium News, Truth Dig, Op-Ed News, Tom Dispatch, Global Research, Middle East Eye, the New Orient Review, Zero Hedge, Washington Blog, Counterpunch, Countercurrents, Daily Beast, Anti-Media, Resilience.org, Nation of Change, The Natural Blaze, Green Med Info, Health Impact News, News Target, Sane Vax, that's S-A-N-E, Vax, Vaccine Reaction, Geoengineering Watch, Activist Post, Before It's News, GM Watch, The Guardian, most of the time, The Independent, Russia Today, Judicial Watch, Echo Watch, Wake Up World, Economic Collapse, Terra Daily, Pacific Standard, Religion News Service, Religion Dispatches, Organic Lifestyle, Speed Daily, and Yes Magazine. There are others that are also good and high quality, but these are the ones that we know are legitimate. And I share that with you just to let you know that not everything out there is corrupt or fake news. In fact, this would help a lot of us. You see, we're considered here at the Progressive Radio Network, and my program in particular, is considered a program of record, meaning that people trust what we say because we vet it. we read a tremendous amount, and we then look to see, can a particular story be verified? Is it accurate? And every single day, the different editors and our scholars say, fake, 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 and we don't use something. Not verifiable. That doesn't mean it's fake, it's just we can't verify it. We don't use anonymous sources. So only when we can verify that something is legitimate do we use it. And therefore we pride ourselves in always mentioning where we get our sources. For example, every day when I start my program, which will go in a few minutes, with the latest on health and healing, I always state the source. I always tell you, this came from this university, published in this peer-reviewed journal, and what the results were. So therefore, if you chose to, you could go to that source and independently verify that for yourself. And that's a good thing. We should do more of that. But we don't. And the fact that something is considered liberal or conservative or progressive in and of itself does not mean that it's objective or unbiased. And I let all of our staff know that your own personal, political, or ideological, or religious beliefs is your business. You're here to find information that empowers people. And so, in the very near future, we'll be publishing another major article. We'll be producing another major documentary. In fact, we have two documentaries coming out this year, and we just brought out Saving the Planet, and we brought out Plant Codes, too, this year. Last year, it was Poverty, Inc. So we get the best minds on the planet together. And by the way, we're going to start something new. Later this week, we're going to post up on the Progressive Radio Network. We're going to post a special Conversations with Remarkable Minds series. There will be hundreds of programs. These are the finest minds anywhere on the planet. They talk about universal truths, and they're extremely insightful. You know when you're hearing one of them because of how they can communicate, what to communicate, and how good you feel afterwards having listened to it. So now you have that as a source. Additionally, this week, we will post hundreds of progressive commentary hours. These are the best minds on the most important and serious topics that we can come up with. So therefore, if we decide to do a show on why we're against the war on drugs, we would have the experts who have objective research and scholarly research showing why the war on drugs doesn't work. And what are the consequences? And how much money we waste? And how many lives are destroyed? And what we could do to change it? We just did one last night. Just one of the most wonderful people you'd ever want to meet. I had on last night, Professor Kroger, talking about trees and saving the boreal forest and planting new trees and how trees can be used because of their medicinal properties. Even sitting near, as she said, sitting, if you're depressed, sit underneath a weeping willow tree. There are six different types of acids that they release into the air, all beneficial to relieve pain and help us with our depression. Who would have known that? But she's considered the world's greatest expert on trees, communication between trees, and the importance of trees. And she's also one of the last druids on Earth. She comes from a whole lineage. She can track back her family tree almost 1,500 years. I mean, how many people can do that? That's the type of people you hear on the Progressive Commentary Hour. So you've got two sources now, the Progressive Commentary Hour, hundreds of programs, and Conversations with Remarkable Minds. Again, hundreds of programs, and you'll be able to go there and free of charge as a public service, download those programs. So everything we can do to vet, to investigate, to empower, we're doing right here. And as you'll see, that's what we do every day. And wherever possible, we'll be taking calls. We have a talkback segment on many of our calls. We don't screen people, so whoever's there gets in and shares their points of view. And thank goodness the vast majority of people calling in have something constructive to ask or something important to share. So we certainly value that. and we're looking at the whole world, not just America, when it comes to our programming. Now, let's do what we normally do every day, and that is begin our program with the latest on health and nutrition. For those of you who suffer from constipation, there's a lot of ways of overcoming constipation. Vitamin C with a juice, a simple juice, apple cider vinegar, lemon, and ginger in the morning. You can dilute it with green apple. Put a little vitamin C in that. It will open you up very nicely. Or you can take what the latest research shows is Korean cactus juice. And it not only decreased constipation, and its soluble fiber content also improved the bowel movements, colon thickness, and gut microbiota. All good. So just add one more thing that we can use to help those who are constipated and don't have the right kind of bacteria. I mentioned that I always try, if I have it available, depending upon where I'm at, because on the road I don't always have the liquids because you can't get them through the airport security. Unless you want to take 10, you know, under 3-ounce containers, which is not always feasible. But if you have access to beet juice, buy it or make it and drink it before you exercise, because it could save you from a heart attack or a stroke while you're exercising. It also improves the quality of your exercise because you have more oxygen available. It helps your arteries and your veins. This is the latest from Wake Forest University. Drinking a beet juice before working out makes the brain of older adults perform more efficiently, mirroring the operations of a younger brain. That's according to this study. Quote, we knew going in that a number of studies had shown that exercise has positive effects on the brain. But what we showed in this brief training study was hypertensive, meaning high blood pressure, older adults, that comparing them when they exercised alone or when they had beet juice and then exercised resulted in the brain connectivity that closely resembles what you see in younger adults, end quote. Now, in lay language, that simply means that the beet juice is providing the nutrients to the brain along with the exercise, then in effect gives you a younger brain. And that's important. And this was published in the Journal of Gerontology and Medical Sciences. Very important. Why is the average diet of people in Great Britain, Australia, the United States so bad? Well, Queensland University of Technology says, quote, saturated fat is a prime suspect in the onset of osteoarthritis. And that's what the Queensland University scientists found. It changed the composition of cartilage, particularly in weight-bearing joints, that's your hips and knees. And it was published in Scientific Reports. So get off the high-fat, high-carb diet and get on to a healthy plant-based diet and watch the difference. And finally, from the University of York, exposure to nitrogen dioxide, or NO2, can be as bad for people's happiness as bereavement or divorce, according to a study. And they took a look at what happens when you're breathing in polluted air and how that polluted air ends up impacting your brain. And also what happens when you get all this nitrogen dioxide, which you don't want, and it impacts our brain, just like aromas. Good aromas impact our brain in a good way, bad aromas in a bad way. And good music, bad music, good vibrations, bad vibrations. We are directly impacted by it. One more reason to put plants in your home, have a good green backyard if you can. If not, a lot of ivies inside and aromatic flower plants that you can bring inside. Work with orchids. They're very relaxing to be around. And then put some scented, maybe 2 to 3 drops of lavender or lemongrass on pillows or in your bathwater. All of this can change how our brains are perceiving the environment we're in, and that can be a very good thing. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. Today, a special commentary from Professor Henry Giroux towards a politics of ungovernability. I also have a commentary I'll be sharing with you. And we're going to listen in to some audio clips I think are relevant. And one of them is, on a flight, there was a person who had seen me on a PBS station, because I have a very popular program. In fact, it's number one on many of the stations where it's playing around the country. And I was coming back from that station, helping the station to raise funds. And this person was sitting right across from me and says, "I just saw you last night on TV. I got a question for you. When you look around and you look at what's happening now, what do you see is one of your biggest issues that you have to deal with? And how do you deal with it?" It was a legitimate question. Happy to answer it. And I said that we don't understand who to believe. Do we believe the mainstream? Do we believe those on the left or the liberal community who've told us we have your interests at stake? Who do we believe? And I said, if you get the wrong information and you act on it, then everything thereafter will be a negative. And I said, if you look back, and I gave an example, look at the Vietnam War. We were lied to. Not a single person was held accountable. No one went to jail for crimes against humanity. And yet there's no statute of limitations on crimes against humanity. Look at the invasion of Panama, completely unnecessary. Crimes against humanity. Look at Grenada, crimes against humanity. Then look at Afghanistan, because it was not Afghanistan who attacked the United States. Most of them were from Saudi Arabia. And I said, and look at Iraq. Then look at Libya, and now look at Syria, and look at what's happening in Yemen. I said, most people support these efforts because they believe that the United States is exceptional, because everyone in the media keeps saying we're exceptional. Well, exceptional people, you assume, are exceptionally sensitive, exceptional at using common sense and reason, exceptional in using good science. And we seem to be on the other side of every one of those equations. That's why even though the good science says the global warming is real, we're not doing anything about it. And even though we have income inequality, we don't do anything about it. And even though we have, at least by their own official statistics, 39% of all prisoners shouldn't be in prison, and yet we're not doing anything about it. And the largest single debt owed to the United States government, the $20 trillion, is by the federal government. It could forgive it. It could. It could forgive the debt that the banks are holding. It could. Overnight, we could wipe out 75% of the federal debt. Now, we did it for the banks. Why can't we do it for the American people? You see, so we have solutions. But the ideas that we should be doing this are not in any of the mainstream media, and for that matter, in most of the alternative media. It's ironic that I just finished a two-week retreat raising thousands of dollars and contributing my time and a lot of others to help people have a life-changing experience, hopefully. All the profit went to, you know, to help buy premiums for BAI on a station I'm no longer there. Is there a thank you anywhere to the audience? No. To me? No. To the staff? No. Just give us the money. Fine. And who do they put in my place after 41 years? Amy Goodman. Smart move. It was a smart move, because if you're going to be hypocritical, be completely hypocritical. This is the person who privatized, corporatized, profitized Democracy Now!, which was not her. She didn't create it. It was a friend of mine who created it, Samori Marksman. But if you're willing to manipulate truth and call yourself a good liberal, then you're just a good propagandist. So everywhere we look, we've got propagandists. Everywhere. So how is the average person to learn anything? That's where we got to get out of our comfort zones, and we have to spend some time looking for the truth, even if where we find the truth, we're not aligned with that. I believe that wherever the truth is, use it. Don't look at the moniker that is captioning it. So that's why I want you to hear this, because right now, I don't trust a single article published in any of the mainstream or alternative media, except for some, on anything the government says, because the government lies nonstop. But it's been lying for a long time. Who says it's been lying? Who says that the government has planted false stories and rumors and slanders? Who says that the government has engaged in a media McCarthyism? Well, the government. Yeah, listen to this.
Operation Mockingbird was discovered during a 1975 congressional hearing that showed that the CIA was spending $1 billion a year in 2016 dollars, adjusted for inflation, in under-the-table bribes to all major American news outlets, editors, and reporters in exchange for their covert cooperation to act as government mouthpieces and gatekeepers. The director of Operation Mockingbird at the time, Thomas Braden, admitted that if the CIA wanted to, say, extend a present to someone, he said, suppose this man could just use $50,000. That's $250,000 adjusted for inflation today, by the way. He says that he could hand it to him and not have to account to anybody. He said there was simply no limit to the money that it could spend, no limit to the people that they could hire, no limit to the activities that it could decide were necessary. The Congressional Committee's report revealed that the CIA currently maintained a network of several hundred individuals around the world who provide intelligence for the CIA and at times attempt to influence opinion through the use of covert propaganda. These individuals provided the CIA with direct access to a large number of newspapers and periodicals, scores of press services and news agencies, radio and television stations, commercial book publishers, and other foreign media outlets. After the Church Committee's report was completed, Rolling Stone magazine published an article naming some prominent journalists involved with Operation Mockingbird who worked for the New York Times, The Washington Post, Newsweek, Time Magazine, the New York Herald Tribune, Miami News, and other major media outlets. Shortly after these revelations, the former president of CBS, Sid Mickelson, was asked if the CIA still worked with reporters, and he said, yeah, he thinks they probably do, but a reporter would have to be much more circumspect because of the revelations of the 1970s. He said when doing it now, they run the risk of at least being looked at with considerable disfavor by the public, and that you've got to be much more careful about it today. During the early years of the Iraq War, the U.S. military secretly paid Iraqi newspapers to publish stories written by U.S. soldiers claiming that they were written by Iraqis who were supporting the U.S. invasion. Of course, most of the American mainstream media parroted the fear-mongering false claims of the Bush administration about the supposed threat posed by Saddam Hussein and his non-existent weapons of mass destruction. A 2008 report uncovered that many of the military analysts on TV who were reporting on the war in Iraq and the war on terror were actually in the Pentagon's pocket. Hidden behind that appearance of objectivity, the New York Times reported, is a Pentagon information apparatus that has used those analysts in a campaign to generate favorable news coverage for the administration's wartime performance, they admitted. In April of the year 2000, it was discovered that several soldiers from the U.S. Army's Psychological Operations Group had secretly infiltrated CNN and NPR, National Public Radio, several years earlier, where they worked as interns. NPR embarrassingly admitted that the U.S. Army's Psychological Operations Unit did place interns at CNN and NPR in 1998 and 1999. They said that the placements at CNN were reported in the European press, and then they were terminated. CNN's Anderson Cooper interned with the CIA for not one, but two summers while he was in college. But when this was reported 20 years later, he claimed that he decided not to pursue a career with them, but then instead went to become a journalist, even though he had no training or experience, and then quickly became one of the faces of CNN. Cooper wrote on his blog later on CNN's website that he told all his employers over the years, but none of them have chosen to talk about it publicly. These are just a few of the examples that clearly show that Operation Mockingbird type of activities continue to this day. These covert war propaganda programs were also adopted and implemented when social media emerged, and sites like Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, and the comment sections of online news sections were targeted for control as well. I'm Mark Dice. Thanks for watching. Subscribe to my YouTube channel here if you're new. Check out some of the previous videos.
Now let's listen to Brian Stevenson, Executive Director of Equal Justice Initiative.
I was doing a hearing in the Midwest. I had my suit and tie on. I was there early. It was the first time I'd been in that courtroom. And I sat down at defense counsel's table, as I always do, and the judge walked in, and the judge said, hey, you get back out there and you wait out there in the hallway until your lawyer gets here. I don't want any defendant sitting in my courtroom without their lawyer. And I stood up and I said, I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't introduce myself. My name is Brian Stevenson. I am the lawyer. And the judge started laughing. And the prosecutor started laughing, and I made myself laugh because I didn't want to disadvantage my client. But afterward, I was thinking, what is it that when this judge saw a middle-aged black man, it didn't even occur to him that that man sitting at defense counsel's table was the lawyer? And I worry about that judge. I worry that he's sentencing defendants of color more harshly. I worry that he doesn't value and accept the testimony of black and brown witnesses the way he does other people. I worry that a narrative of racial difference compromises his ability to provide fair and just treatment of all people.
Now, is there a double standard practiced by the West regarding terrorism that is killing people in Syria? Please listen in.
People are being starved to death in Aleppo. Children, the victims of chlorine gas attacks just less than a fortnight ago.
Excuse me, my people are being massacred by Western forces, support of terrorists in Syria. Those are the ones who are massacring our people. If the United States had agreed with Russia 3 years ago to fight terrorism together, there would have been no terrorism in Syria. But it is the double standard practiced by the West regarding terrorism that is killing our people. And by the way, killing Western people, whether in Paris or Luxembourg or the United States or anywhere in Europe.
And
it
for
is the
5 years
of Western government.
And for 5 years, your boss, President Assad, has been massacring his own people. And less than a fortnight ago, we saw children gasping for breath after having been the victim of a chlorine gas attack in Aleppo.
We don't care what Western media circulates. We really don't care, because it has proven that it is irrelevant to our reality. President Assad has been standing by his people, has been fighting with his people for the unity of his country and for the integrity of his country. It is other forces in the region and outside the region who are destroying our country, destroying our infrastructure. And if you want a good example, just rethink of Iraq and of Libya. And what did Western forces do to Iraq and Libya? They destroyed both countries. What we are fighting for is to keep our country together.
Good for her. There is two things co-joined. First, you have a report, an accurate report, because I have the actual Senator Church and the head of CBS News on film saying what he just said. about how all the major media were completely infiltrated and influenced by the CIA. Hence, whatever the official position was to be promoted, they were the cheerleaders. Now we have the same thing. On the one hand, we have everyone in Congress, with few exceptions, promoting war. Everyone, Democrats, Republicans, John Kerry, Hillary Clinton, all supported bombing, Trump bombing with the big bombs in 58 missiles in Syria at an air base because of the assumption that he was responsible for poisoning his own people. And yet no evidence exists that he did that. In fact, all the evidence accumulating now shows that it was not Assad. Assad just had an election. You may not have heard of it. He won 89%. The people of Syria support Assad. There is no civil war. There has been no civil war. We speak with the journalists who've been in the war zone. We speak with the journalists who are not embedded and hence biased. We invite people in this program who are scholars of the area or actual, real, known and respected international peace activists, not someone out of a think tank that ends up going nowhere and comes on television to talk about what they know when they haven't been anywhere to know anything. And the only information they have is from the White Helmet that Amy Goodman promotes and which we condemn. Well, you got two sides. They're either heroes, there's Democracy Now!, or they're terrorists. That's what we believe. And $100 million went to them, and we've been able to get footage showing them standing on Syrian bodies and faking with the same child over and over. But the journalists we use, you're not going to hear on the mainstream media. And the journalists who believe that Assad is responsible for everything, like Gaddafi was responsible for everything, Saddam Hussein was responsible for everything, and those are the people who only have one opinion. Their minds will not be changed. So just be aware we're being influenced by think tanks, foundations, major industries, the media, ideologues, the pundits left and right. So it's understandable how the average person could be confused or align on the wrong side, where we perceive that every action anywhere in the world deserves an immediate and severe reaction or preventative action that is military instead of diplomatic. We don't look for the facts or the truth anymore. We assume that because of our uniqueness as a nation, our exceptionalism, we can act with impunity. It is impossible to imagine the damage Trump and his white nationalist, economic fundamentalists, and white supremacist friends will do to civil liberties and the social contract and the planet and life itself in the next few years. Rather than address climate change, the threat of nuclear war, galloping inequality, the elimination of public goods, Trump and his vicious acolytes have accelerated the threats faced by these growing dangers. And moreover, the authoritarian steamroller just keeps bulldozing through every social protection and policy put in place, however insufficient, in the last few years, in order to benefit the poor, the vulnerable, and the environment. I can remember supporting Ralph Nader's legions of young idealistic lawyers. They were called Nader's Raiders. He and I were starting our careers about the same time. In fact, we used to write for the same publication on a regular basis, Caveat Emptor. I've posted some of those on my website. You can see the articles we were writing back then. And if people think I only talked about health back then, they would be grossly mistaken. I've been on social action issues my entire life, environmental issues as well. Well, who was responsible for creating the environmental movement? Rachel Carson. Who was responsible for taking that larger overview of the impact of DDT and other toxins being used and its impact upon the environment, animals, birds, eagles, and having eggs that had no membrane on them, and making that into laws to protect us? There's only one person in all of American history, one human being who was never elected to an office but had more impact on how we were protected than anyone in human history in America, Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader is the quintessential American hero. He was enough of a hero for the left and the corporate Democrats because he did not play by their rules, and they knew it. He couldn't be compromised. He couldn't be bought. He could not be made to shift away from his allegiance to the ideals to protect the environment and people and to support special interest groups that Democrats have been doing for decades, clear back through Jimmy Carter. So what do we have today because of this? Well, a neo-fascist politics of emotional brutality, military bigotry, and social abandonment has reached new heights in the United States. Think about the Republican Party and its call to eliminate essential health benefits such as mental health coverage and guaranteed health insurance for people with pre-existing conditions and the elimination of Meals on Wheels programs that benefit mainly the poor and elderly. Now think of the Democrats who did the same during 8 years of Obamacare, which was completely corrupt. If the Democrats and Obama and the Republicans and Trump really want to help people with medical conditions, then they would have the decency to create single-payer coverage as an extension of Medicare. And if it done properly, it would save over $2 trillion a year out of our $3.5 trillion medical bill. Just take the profit out of it. But neither the corporate Democrats or corporate Republicans are going to allow that. So what we have today is a Trump regime continuing to hollow out the welfare state started by Bill Clinton. It builds on Obama's efforts to expand the surveillance state, but with a new and deadly twist. This is particularly clear given the congressional Republicans' decision to advance a bill that would overturn privacy protections for internet users, allowing corporations to monitor, sell, and use everything that you have ever done on the internet, including they could get your entire browsing history and app usage and financial medical information. This is the Orwellian side of Trump's administration that was also Obama's administration, that was also Clinton's administration, that was also Bush administration. So it's not new. This is just the new face of tyranny, which not only makes it easier for the surveillance state to access information, but also sells out the American public to corporate demagogues who view everything in terms of markets and the accumulation of capital. On the other side of the authoritarian coin is the merging of the punishing state and permanent warfare state with a culture of fear and cruelty. Under these circumstances, everyone is viewed as either a potential terrorist or a narcissist consumer, making it easier for the Trump machine to elevate the use of force to the most vulnerable national ideal while opening up lucrative markets for defense and security industries and the growing private prison behemoth. At the level of everyday life, the merging of corporate and political brutalism into a war culture were on full display in the savage beating of a United Airlines passenger who refused to give up his seat because the airlines had overbooked. Couple this with the Star Wars spectacle of the United States dropping a 21,600-pound bomb on the Aachen district in Afghanistan, which has a population of around 95,000, are you really going to believe that there were no civilian deaths? No. That's not how it works. Moreover, the relative silence of the American public in the face of its government dropping the mother of all bombs in Afghanistan and unloading endless weapons of death and destruction in Syria testified to the amnesic state of the country in the moral coma, which has settled like a dense fog on so many of its inhabitants. As historical memory is erased, public spheres and cultural spaces are saturated with violence and the endless spectacles of civic illiteracy. Pedagogies of repression now enable the suffering produced by those most vulnerable, who disappear amidst the endless trivialization produced by the mainstream media, which anxiously awaits for Trump's next tweet in order to increase their ratings and fuel the bottom line. The government propaganda machine has turned into a comic version of a failed reality TV series. Witness the daily spectacle produced by the hapless Sean Spicer. Spicer dreams about and longs for the trappings of Orwell's dystopia, in which he would be able to use his position as a second-rate Joseph Goebbels to produce legitimate and illegitimate information and dictate lies rather than be in the uncomfortable scenario in which he now finds himself of having to defend endless Trump fabrications. For Spicer, the dream of the safety of Orwell's dystopia has given way to the nightmare of him being reduced to the leading character in the Gong Show. Actually, maybe he is the confused frontman for our stand-in president who increasingly resembles a psychopath on steroids, Patrick Bateman from the film American Psycho, truly a symbol of our times. Ignorance is a terrible wound when it is the result of systemic constraints or self-inflicted, but is a pathology and plague when it is willful, the act of refusal to know, and translates into power. Trump and his mostly incompetent, ignorant, low-life appointees are not just stupid and offensive in their ideological smugness. They represent the cream de la cream of the best and brightest from our Ivy League schools, who go to work in industries always starting at a position that the normal person would never be given the advantage of. They are a threat to the very act of thinking and its critical and crucial connection of memory, justice, and truth. Neo-fascist policies and practices now feed a war culture and demand more than a political moral outrage. At the very least, we must be recognized that we are contributing to neo-fascism if we support it, if we buy their products. If we in any way stay connected to them, we are the problem, not just them. It means that we must make viable not only the elements of neo-fascism that animate the new policies and political formations being produced in the Trump administration, but also we must unveil how power is reproduced through those architects, managers, intellects, and institutions for hire that legitimate this distinctively American neoliberal military machine. And make no mistake, the only difference between Hillary Clinton and her policies and how the world would be and Donald Trump and his policies, well, there is no difference, because they were both controlled, completely manipulated by the larger hidden hand of the oligarchs behind them. The supine response of the mainstream press and the general public to ongoing acts of state and corporate violence is a flagrant and horrifying indication of the extent to which the United States government has emerged and has merged into a corporate state with a military state to create a regime of brutality, sadism, aggression, and cruelty. What you saw on the airplane was an extension of that. Every day we see signs of it, we just don't pay attention. It doesn't grab our attention. Even when one of those signs was a simple one, it was a simple case, of a father and son going to the beach in Panama City, Florida, just to have a day out. And why not? What's wrong with that? Nothing's wrong with that. But it becomes wrong when suddenly a child making a sandcastle is approached by someone in authority, one of the beach police, and told that you're in violation there, you can't do that. And when the father asks, why? You know, isn't that part of growing up? Isn't that part of what kids do when you go to the beach? The adults lay in the sand or on a chaise lounge, get some sun, go swimming. The kids look at that sand as a wonderful opportunity to build something. The ocean's going to take it back at night and smooth the canvas out. But in that moment, why not build something? Well, sandcastles were considered the epitome of childhood innocence and the manifestation of youthful creativity. But not when you have a local law that says you can't do that. And so now you got a $500 fine. And for the mere challenge of asking, could they produce the specific law, then you're threatened with 60 days in jail. And then there's calls for backup. Someone actually questioned authority. And of course, that happened in Florida. That's why I'm asking our audience to boycott Panama City Beach. If that's the kind of government you have, if that's the way law enforcement works, if those are the rules you have for your beach, why in the hell would anyone want to visit your beach? But if United Airlines, I suggest we all boycott United Airlines. I fly a lot. I have to for all the films I'm doing, all the social issues I'm addressing, going around the country, leading demonstrations. So I won't fly United. I don't care how much of an inconvenience, I'll find another place. Why don't you do the same? Because that's the language they listen to. That's the only language corporate America ever listens to, is when you become disconnected from them, when they no longer have the power over you by providing you with a service or a product and you giving them money that allows them to continue on their merry way. So you see, we're seeing the militarization of our life. We're seeing how people are being treated. Every day, it's unacceptable. The established political parties and politicians are nothing more than the crude lobbyists and shock troops for the financial elite who believe everything is for sale. The boundaries of humanity are now inscribed and defined exclusively through the metrics of the twin logic of commercial transactions and the politics of disposability. The horrors unfolding under the Trump administration are not only abetted by white supremacists and religious evangelicals, but also by liberals who still believe that capitalism and democracy are synonymous and who appear to delight and rush to the sport of any military intervention or act of aggression the United States wages against a foreign power, providing that the liberal leaders, whether it's Noam Chomsky or Hillary Clinton or Amy Goodman, have so said that it is legitimate. There is a suspension of all critique. Liberals are fronted over alleged charges of Russian spying, but say nothing about their own country, which does far more than spy on other countries it disagrees with. It actively overthrows them through other illegal means or military force. Why isn't this a major issue for discussion? Trump's brand of authoritarianism is a combination of savagery of neoliberalism and civic illiteracy on steroids. This legacy of neo-fascism represents more than a crisis of civic literacy and courage. It is a crisis of civic culture, if not politics itself. As civic culture wanes, a market-based ideology increases its grip on the American public. And this militant ideology of sadism and cruelty is all too familiar and is marked by unbridled individualism, a disdain for the welfare state, the elevation of unchecked self-interest to an organizing principle of society, the glorification of militarism, and a symbolic erosion of any viable notion of citizenship. And while we're at it, what was in your minds, Congress, when you passed a bill knowing that it will be immediately signed that allows hibernating bears and wolves to be killed along with their pups in their dens? And what does it mean when we have a president whose sons proudly go out with high-powered rifles onto animal reserves and kill lions and others for trophies? And you put those people in charge of anything? No, we have gone way over the brink. Neo-fascism feeds on the spectacle, a misplaced populism in a mood economy that reduces all problems to matters of self-blame and defective character. Under such circumstances, the militarization of society expands more readily to reach deeply into everyday life, producing militarized subjects, exalting military-style discipline, criminalizing an increasing range of social behaviors, and transforming local police into paramilitarized soldiers, more adept at working as neo-narco-terrorist hunters in South America than walking the simple streets of America. They become sources of national pride. The curse of the theatrical performance so endemic to fascism has been updated with the internet and new digital technologies and allows the legacies of fascism to live on in a distinctly American model. The war culture must be stopped, and hopefully more and more efforts will be made in the name of collective struggle. Today, I was listening before I started my program to Gerald Celante, a longtime friend and one of the true voices of change, and it was just November a year ago that Gerald, Ralph Nader, Professor Thurman, Mia Benjamin, and myself met in Kingston, New York, to start the new project, Occupy Peace and Prosperity. And I sent Gerald today a letter explaining how we must now take it to the next step and how to get people involved at the local level. So I'm looking forward to seeing at least 2,000 to 3,000 of the brightest people in the world joining together to motivate, inspire, and help lead by example on social changes that matter to the local people. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.